I am a licensed bone remover.
Licensed you? Who? I want to see the authority figure who decided to stamp this one's certificate.
Good question. It's me. I'm the queen of this kingdom. I write my own license.
Hey, you want to hear a story?
Hello, and welcome to Lore Makers, the show where we showcase the storytellers, the creators, and the world builders. I am your host, Scarlet Song, she, her, your local librarian, and today we'll be dipping our toes into deeper waters, in bubbly games, and delving into the backstory of today's amazing creative.
Who are you, you sweet sea bunny?
Hello, I am Jeruna, she, her, and I am a VTuber / streamer. I play games, I also do art and pixel art, and I love creating things and stories and drawing and games and... Hi!
Help. My kokoro, I only can take so much. So, what kind of things do you create?
I guess like one of the main things I create is actually I draw a lot.
Yeah.
I do a lot of drawing, though recently it's mostly commission focused because I've been very busy. I suppose recently it's mostly been VTubing stuff. Uh-huh. And I'm not sure, should we introduce that a little bit?
No, you are correct. That is an excellent point. Would you be willing to give us a heads up? What is VTubing and what is a VTuber?
Okay, so VTubing is basically where somebody uses a visual representation or a character they've created in place of a webcam or their own face while they're doing streaming or video content. Mm-hmm. It can be like pre-made YouTube videos as well. And mm-hmm. usually that means a 2D model or a 3D model. It can also just be a solitary picture or a PNG. But mm-hmm. basically something that represents themselves as a streamer or as a content creator. And it's a very nice alternative to having to brush your hair every day and like turning on the camera.
So what you're saying is you don't brush your hair.
Not always.
You've heard it here first.
I'm usually in my pajamas for the vast majority of my streams, so there's that too.
I mean, I'm not currently in a warm fluffy robe right now. That is not I.
Wait, hold on. I have to question you, Scarlet, because yeah. when we're doing this interview, it's September, and you're talking of warm, fluffy robe.
Yeah.
How hot is it for you right now?
It is 14 degrees Celsius because it is coming out of winter. I'm in Southern Hemisphere, yo.
Right, Southern Hemisphere. In my mind, I just think Australia is always hot.
Okay, so...
like, it never gets cold.
That's a very easy assumption to make, given that the center of the country and actually the majority of the country is desert. But that is also the least inhabited part. So I'm on north, south, east. Okay, I'm on the east side of Australia. I had to... So I don't know if you're the same, but... Mm-hmm. The mnemonic for remembering cardinal directions yeah. for me is an Australian one. It's never eat soggy Weet-Bix, which is a type of cereal. So,
oh, that's delightful.
So I am on the east side or the eat side, which is also very prevalent because Melbourne's got a huge cafe culture. But I'm on the east side of Australia, down in Victoria, so closer to Antarctica as well. So usually our winters are pretty brisk, but ooh. Our summers can get to like 45.
Honestly, that kind of sounds like the Tokyo climate because
yeah,
I live in Japan, in Tokyo, and like the summers, you used to live in Japan, so I'm sure you know quite well yourself.
Oh, yeah. Summers in Japan are the worst, guys.
Which is worse, summer in Japan or Australia? Because you say both of them, like, heat to 40.
Summer in Japan.
It's the humidity, isn't
it's
it?
It's the humidity. So for some context, in Australia, it is also very dry because of the desert and the winds and the climate. But Japan has humidity. And humidity sucks.
Just adds like an extra 5 degrees.
Yeah. Because even though Tokyo's on the coast, it's kind of a caldera to some yeah. degree. Or like it's almost like a bucket. I've heard Kyoto's the worst for it.
Oh, yeah. No, Kyoto gets really hot. So I think Tokyo has the downside that depending on where you are, like the buildings reflect the heat. And it just kind of becomes like a mirror dome and like all the sunlight gets like...
So everything's reflecting.
Yeah.
Mm. But back to VTubing.
Yes.
What made you pick VTubing?
I think my path into VTubing is a little bit unorthodox.
Ooh.
Because actually prior before I started, I'd known of it. I kind of knew like Kizuna Ai.
Yeah.
Which, for people who don't know, was one of the first VTubers. And she isn't much like the ones we know today, which is mostly people who do live streams, but she did like pre-made YouTube video content.
Yeah, she was very different.
Much like Let's Plays and such.
Yeah.
So I knew of that, and I kind of knew it as a concept, but I wasn't actually actively watching a lot of VTubers when I started out.
Mm-hmm.
What actually happened is that I literally had a dream.
Oh, a dream, you say?
Yes, I literally went to bed, slept, had a dream in which I made a VTuber character, woke up, and was like, this is actually kind of a cute concept. What I mostly remembered was like the color scheme of monochrome with yellow.
Oh, which is your current
one? Yes, it's my current color scheme.
Oh my god, I love your color scheme.
And I was like, I should do a sketch. So I did a sketch, and I was like, this is kind of cute. And it just so happened to be a national holiday in Japan. I had like the Thursday off at a full day, and I was like,
it's time.
I've heard of V-Word before.
It's time.
So in one complete mad dash fever dream, yo, where I just spent 14 hours knowing nothing from V-Word, just teaching myself in one go.
Hell yes.
I made myself a model.
Yo, yes. Because there is not the resources there are today. Because I remember when I first started.
No.
For listeners, I am a VTuber of many elements. I would say I'm more of a mixed tuber. I do face cam sometimes because I guest on Phoenix's stream. And I mostly do art, but I change avatars all the time because I'm never satisfied with my own art. So
understandable.
Oh my gosh.
I feel that.
Especially with V-Roid. Like, V-Roid's gotten a lot of new features.
Yes.
So for context, V-Roid is a character creator, essentially. You get a base model and you can tweak a whole bunch of features. It's gotten so much more since I started.
It is much more user-friendly now. I made my model on the old version of V-Roid. And like, these days, there's like a bunch of like nice preset hairstyles.
So many!
Eye selections and textures.
Yes!
Back then, easily of those like 14 hours I spent, 8 of them were just doing the hair.
Right.
Because it was not intuitive.
No, it is not.
I have an art background. I know how to draw. The textures weren't too hard. You know, those took a bit of time, but I knew how to do that. That was just drawing, you know?
Right.
The actual 3D modeling part of V-Roid?
Yeah.
Hard. Really hard.
Deciding how many bones a thing has, how much weight is on it.
Yeah.
Gosh, yeah.
And the funniest thing is, like, even though it's much more intuitive and better now, if I try to import my model into the updated version, it just breaks apart at the seams.
It breaks so bad. That's honestly half the reason I changed models, was because I was wanted to try, like, 0.1.
Oh.
And then
I understand.
It didn't work. And now, with my design as it is, so for context, I do a totally not werewolf VTuber.
Definitely not a werewolf.
Definitely not a werewolf. I'm not allergic to silver or anything. A lot of people are allergic to silver. Shut up.
Yeah, exactly.
And this is something I do want to get into, because something I'm really curious about is VTuber lore.
Yes.
Because that fascinates the crap out of me.
Yes.
But one of the things that happened with me was I have had generally the same sort of aesthetic representation of myself. It's just progressed more and more into lycanthropy as time is going on. But there aren't really many systems unless you're willing to import into a separate program such as Unity, which, I'm not gonna lie, 3D makes me uncomfortable.
3D is hard. Honestly, I'm impressed I managed to learn V-Roid, because like before V-Roid, I did like a little stint trying out Unity, and that was a disaster. Like, I tried to follow a tutorial step by step, and I had a lot more vertices that I did not know where they were coming from.
I have a really wonderful friend who is an amazing 3D modeler. Absolutely insane.
Love that. I have so much respect for people who can do 3D modeling. Like, it's it's an art that completely eludes me, and I love it. Like, every single time I see 3D models, I'm just, whoa.
One of the things that we might be doing in the future is we might be collaborating, because they're a big Warframe fan.
Ooh.
And to all of the people listening who are into Warframe, shout out to you, Tenno. Warframe's got like an amazing community base where there's a lot of artists and 3D artists that actually make content for Warframe.
Oh, like 3D printable models and such?
Basically costume effects, so people can get skin.
Ooh.
So we might be collaborating on some stuff in the future.
That is very cool. I love that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, because I didn't realize at the time, but I started to make helmets, and maybe it's because I just have a lot of experience with people, but making objects is just relaxing for me as an artist. It's like, I don't have to think about several layers of muscle and bone. This is nice.
I mean, I can kind of get that because I sometimes like draw assets and stuff as well.
Oh God, I love your assets.
Thank you. Just like having a shape and yes. Just this is my shape. I can carve away at it. I can chip away at it. And there's no anatomy here.
Because you and I are very different when it comes to, I think, painting.
Oh, yes.
I want to say you're very clean. You are so clean compared to me.
I'm so clean. I have, my styles go two ways. It's like either I have lines or there's no lines, but either way it ends up pretty clean.
Yes, you're like super clean and I am a messy, painty person.
Oh, I love that though.
See, I love yours because I can't do that.
I love the messy painting style though. Like it's like the texture. It's like I want to touch it. You know, like how sometimes when you see like a painting in real life.
Yes, especially if it's one using paint texture as work, right?
Oh, yes, exactly.
I've seen some beautiful paintings of flowers where they've used the palette knife or the palette brush to just make the petals physical form, essentially putting a 3D object on a canvas.
Oh my God, yes. I used to go to the museum a lot when I was younger. My mother really loves museums.
Mine too.
So I would always come along and we'd always go to exhibitions and just the urge to want to touch the painting. Yes. You can't, but you want to.
Yes, there's like that tiny velvet rope, or you know deep in your soul that somebody in one of those black suits is staring at you menacingly.
Yes. Exactly, especially if you're like a child at an exhibition. Like they don't trust you. Like you're a well-behaved child, but they don't trust you.
So my mum was very smart. She said that if I really liked painting, I was allowed to touch the postcard of it at the end from the gift shop. So that's kind of how she navigated a lot of that stuff.
Smart.
So she'd be like, oh, they have a small size one of this in the gift shop. We'll go get one of those and you got to make sure that you don't touch anything, Scarlett. And I'm like, okay, mama.
This reminds me, like, there was actually this really cool, like, project they had in the Netherlands.
Oh, yeah.
Which was, like, introduce art to children. Mm. And what they did is basically they had all these really cool artists and they, like, set up an exhibition. And, like, some of them were big names. Mm. But the thing is, only children were allowed inside. But they were given, like, the stickers, you know, like, to buy the art.
Yeah.
But because parents weren't allowed to come alone, the parents couldn't point like, oh, no, you should get that one because that's like from the fancy famous painting.
Yeah, yeah.
So only the children got to select like which art they wanted to buy. So you got like a ticket for like $30, but like the kids got to choose which painting they wanted to take home.
That's amazing.
Yeah, we have some paint picked by me and my brother like still hanging around the house. I just pick like the colorful, the one with the nice texture. So like the animals in them, you know, like the stuff that appealed to me.
Yes. So I don't think I actually knew this about you. So you're from the Netherlands.
I am indeed. I was born in the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. I've lived there most of my life. Mm-hmm. Though I actually have a dual nationality. Mm. My mother is British. I also spent some time in England at a boarding school when I was growing up, which is why my accent is such a mix. It's mostly Dutch, but it's all over the place.
That's okay. Everyone comments on my accent being mostly American, and I turn to them and go, I lived in Australia, and then I lived in Japan teaching American English. And they're like, so it was the American English. And I'm like, no, it's because Australia doesn't know how to provide its own TV broadcast programming, and all the cool stuff was in American. So this is what happens when you put your child in front of a TV, people.
The pop culture effect.
Oh my gosh. So my university background is actually English as an international language. So English as it's used all over the world.
Oh, that's cool.
And one of the things that I've studied, because I wrote a paper for my honors thesis on a thing called metrolingualism. And basically what that is if you stick a whole bunch of people from different countries in the one spot and you give them a single language to communicate in, you are going to make that your own.
Yeah.
Like those people are going to use that as a tool and then they're going to mix their own words in, was how the fancy paper did it.
Yes.
Your girl Scarlett made it about pop culture. So she had an excuse to go to all of the conventions that she was tabling at that year.
Oh, let's go.
Without guilt. So my university thesis paper was on the use of popular culture language and jargon as imported from Japan. Because with the love of anime, we've adopted a whole bunch of language norms, right?
Sure did.
Like senpai, that sort of stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's carried off a lot of regular, still to this day, used linguistic terms that anybody within that in-group can say and speak and everyone understands it.
Yeah.
But my biggest part of it was, hey, yo, media influences people. And my favorite part about it was the paper was titled, and I quote, "I am the senpai."
Oh my god.
A study in metrolingualism in Australian youth Englishes and the pop culture sphere.
That's amazing. I love that.
Anyway, getting back to VTuber. Oh, this interview's chaos. I love it.
I love it.
So, I mentioned briefly that my VTuber lore
yes.
is on not being a werewolf.
Yes.
Now, for the longest time, it was just being in charge of a flower field. It still is. It's still how I describe my community.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you think and why do you think that VTubers create lore? Because your lore is centered around your design of being a sea bunny.
Yes. I think, of course, this will all be different for each VTuber. Like, some people might go in with, like, you know, the same equivalent as somebody showing up to the D&D table with, like, 50 pages, backstories ready, is done. But I also think that a lot of them might have, like, just a paragraph or a sentence or two when they start. And when I started, I was more in the latter camp because, like I said, like, my VTuber was created in basically what was a one-day fever dream that ended with me going, like, huh, I have a model now. I could actually try streaming with this.
And then you did.
And then I did. So when I started, my lore was very simple. Mm. Like, just like, I knew I was a sea bunny. It's an animal. Jaruna parva, it's where I got my name from.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a Latin scientific name for the sea bunny, which is a type of sea slug.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I knew I have anthropomorphic sea bunny. I vaguely had it in my mind that like, I live on the bottom of like the ocean in Japan somewhere,
mm-hmm.
probably near Tokyo, like explains my location in real life.
Mm-hmm.
And sea bunnies are actually geographically located there. But beyond that, mm-hmm. I didn't have much.
Mm.
And the rest kind of just came up organically during stream. Like some of them became like in jokes from the chatters.
Yeah.
I, over time, created the idea that, like, I was royalty or the queen or the princess because, like, half the chat was already, like, referring to me as, like, ruling my kingdom anyway, and I just went with it.
That's interesting. So VTuber lore, for you at least, was a collaborative event.
It was emergent in a way. Like, it's not necessarily collaborative, but, like, some of it was just, like, me making offhand jokes on stream and then just, like, running with it.
Right.
Like, I think one of the best examples is a more recent one, which is basically came from the fact that, like, of course, sea bunnies, they're like, they're slugs.
Yeah.
They have no bones. They're boneless creatures. So I'd be joking about being boneless.
They go, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. So I joke a lot about, like, being boneless. So, like, you know, as many VTubers do, I have, like, a redeem where people can throw things at me. And I just joke that, like, it doesn't hurt me because I'm boneless, you know, it bounces right off me. It's all good. And like, because they can throw the sea bunnies at me, it's like, no, 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 it's fine. You're exercising them. They have no bones. They bounce like right off like rubber balls. They enjoy this. This is their exercise. So it started a lot with like jokes about being boneless, which slowly started evolving into like me just joking about the benefits of being boneless. So I'd be like, yeah, being boneless is great. Like, why do you think I'm immortal? Like, it's the benefits of not having bones. Like, no broken bones, no bone disease, no osteoporosis. It's great. Like, boneless living, perfect.
Yep, maximum yoga.
Maximum yoga. Very flexible.
Yep.
Which started me joking about stealing the bones of the people in my chat.
Oh my goodness. Why does it always end up so dark with VTubers?
Right. So now there's just like a running joke where I steal everybody's bones and I'm like the bone collector for the good of, you know, out of the good of my heart because I'm trying to make everybody healthier. So I am a licensed bone remover.
Who licensed you? Who? I want to see the authority figure who decided to stamp this one's certificate.
Good question. It's me. I'm the queen of this kingdom. I write my own license.
False. You are at my campfire.
Oh,
I
no.
rule here.
Damn it, I need to hide these bones. I need to get rid of them right now. Don't look in the back.
It's all right. Check them on the fire.
Okay. Check them in.
They'll make decent kids. All right. So
that's basically where my lore has started heading right now. Like now at this point, I'm pretty sure I have a throne made of bones in my castle.
Oh my god. Do you just have... So what you're saying is you're not a necromancer, but you're very close.
I'm getting close. Like with the amount of bones I've gathered, I'm pretty sure if I wanted to dabble a little bit...
Can I use you as a D&D monster?
Absolutely. I mean, speaking of monsters and lore...
Oh?
I'm not sure if you've seen it, but I do have a more monstrous mermaid form.
No, I have not.
I will send it to you.
I will link this in the show notes, by the way, guys. Everything we've talked about, I will attempt to link.
I'll actually link you two pictures. One of them is like my more royal version, like the outfit that I made later on. The other is like my monster, which is like my true form, so to say. So if you want to add this as a D&D monster, please feel free.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie. There's a couple of Astral Sea locations coming up in my Spelljammer game. So that'll...
Ooh.
Well, more specifically, it's an Astral Sea. So no doubt you exist somewhere.
Most definitely.
So in the context of VTubing for you, because you do a lot of different creative pursuits, mostly yes. Art, your streams... I feel like I've seen your streams just improve vastly since I've seen...
Oh, yes.
You've taken the time to really invest yourself in these. What do you get out of streaming?
I think thinking of when I first met you, more or less, and when you would have first seen me, that was still fairly early on in my streaming career. So you've seen me with like my very rudimentary overlays that I made in like 20 minutes before starting stream. I think I've improved a lot.
She says as if they weren't great.
What do I get out of streaming? I think for me, it's a lot of fun. It's like, in a way, an activity, very community oriented. It like kind of feels like hanging out with friends in a way, because you always have like the people you know, like coming back and like also like people you don't know yet. There's always like fun new conversations to be had. Personally, I stream art, but I mostly stream games these days because I've noticed that when I stream art, specifically when I work on commissions, I work really slowly.
Okay, yeah.
So when I stream art now, it's usually like more doodle-based streams. When I actually have work that needs to be done, I tend to do it off stream. But when it comes to games, though, I'm finding myself actually playing a lot more games than I did before streaming. Because like before streaming, I was kind of in like that rut of being an adult with a full-time job and like doing other work. And then like you're kind of tired, so you don't really want to game right now.
Yeah.
But like ever since I started streaming, I've actually finished a bunch of games on stream. It's great. I'm actually playing games. I'm playing them through the end. I'm seeing the end of the story, because like before that, sometimes, you know, you kind of get stuck on like that one annoying stage and you kind of like just give up on the game.
Yep. No, I've been there. I have my backlog of games that are almost done, but not quite yet. But I've gotten the emotional satisfaction out of them. Mostly JRPGs, yes. I will not deny it.
That's the mood.
Right? There's a lot of JRPGs out there that you get to a certain part in the story, and the part that you actually care about is resolved, and what's left is the boss fight.
Yeah.
And if you don't care about the boss fight, you're good.
I'd call it like the JRPG 80% point, because it's always like near the end.
Right.
And like you haven't quite finished the story, but like you finished most of it. Yeah. And you kind of get where it's going now. And I don't particularly feel like doing this boss fight like another 4 hours, because like, you know, especially all the JRPGs, you can't even skip the cutscenes that like lead up to it. And
gosh, yes. God. Oh, yeah. Oof. The guilty one that I'm looking at currently, like I'm looking directly at its icon because I have been staring at it for months.
Oh no.
Is Tales of Arise.
Oh, Tales games are guilty of that too.
I never finished Vesperia because I got the satisfaction towards the end of doing the rescue. And same here, Tales of Arise, I got the satisfaction of doing the rescue, and the rest was just, we're going to fight the final boss, and all of me is kind of like, yeah, but I'm emotionally fulfilled right now.
I'm done.
Yeah, I'm done. And the other part of it, honestly, is that with a lot of storytelling, at least in JRPGs, the thing that I'm invested in is not finishing it. It's in the characters.
Exactly.
And if the characters have kind of had their arc, I feel done. Does that make sense?
No, that makes total sense, because your character already had their emotional development. So what's left is, I guess, saving the world. But
I mean,
but you know, that's not quite as pressing as like the emotion.
So for you, I've noticed that you create a lot of characters, right? Like you kind of make some stuff up on the fly. But for you, you create a lot of characters. What's it like building stories for them?
It depends a lot on like what I'm creating. Of course, for my VTuber persona, she is in many ways me.
Yep.
But with sea bunny lore attached to it.
Me with lycanthropy.
Yep. I think one thing I hadn't mentioned, but I do think that like another really good reason why VTubers have lore is actually because a lot of people do VTubing for like a certain degree of separation and anonymity.
Yes.
So having that bit of lore like helps you
think of yourself as a character.
Exactly. And also like with questions, like if people start bothering you for private information, it's like, oh, where do you live? On the ocean. What do you do for work? I'm a princess. Like, what about your family? They're sea bunnies too. Like, you know, you can,
yeah,
it's a really good way to like dodge the more personal questions that people might throw at you.
Have you gotten a lot of that?
I've gotten a little here and there. Most of the time, people are pretty respectful.
Mm.
Though sometimes people will try to push.
Mm.
At which point, I will usually just have to be like, no, I'm not going to tell you. Please stop.
Yes. So I definitely started to feel more comfortable later on.
Mm-hmm.
When I added lore to my persona, because yeah. I was face cam when I first started streaming.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just got a couple of comments that just made me a little bit too uncomfortable to have face cam on. So I switched to VTubing.
Yeah.
Adding that little bit of lore does make me more comfortable on stream. Because you're right, you can deflect that way. Or in the case of stuff, it almost gives me an excuse to, when I'm being mean, I can say, be careful, I have fangs underneath all of this.
Be careful, I'm gonna steal your bones.
Right? Like, it, that odd amount of threatening presence is honestly very helpful.
Yeah.
Unless I am face cam streaming on somebody else's stream, like the Phoenix Awaki stream, or mm-hmm. I'm with someone else, I find I get way more creeps when I'm by myself.
Yeah. I think VTubing actually as a medium is really good for dealing with that kind of creep stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I've never streamed with webcam myself, but I did, like, before VTubing, do a lot of cosplaying. So I've had, like, my own fair share of, like,
oh my gosh, yes,
comfortable comments and attention online, even when you're just kind of just vibing.
Yep.
Which is why I kind of never really wanted to stream with cam on.
Mm-hmm. I totally feel you. So my last personal face cam stream for my birthday, I did a birthday cam stream.
Mm-hmm.
I did face cam because we were baking.
Yeah.
I made mocha brownies, I think, by the end.
How were they?
Oh, so good.
Nice.
They were so good. But yes, during that face cam stream, I kid you not, within the first 15 minutes, I had someone go, so when does the birthday sex start?
Excuse me? That is,
I know,
such a weirdo comment.
I know. And it was like the first thing that was said out of nowhere. And my response was, I cackled. And I was like, oh, honey, never. And I just banned them on the spot.
Good.
It was just so out of left field.
That is what compels people.
I know. Yeah. It was so bad. I don't understand, at least in the streamer sphere. I feel like you see it very commonly in female streamers, right?
I think VTubing has definitely, of course, for everybody, but especially for like female creators, it's been a very nice way to like not have to deal with like constant criticism
mm-hmm.
when it comes to like appearance or lights or like whether your hair's on mm-hmm. or you're like wearing a good outfit or makeup mm-hmm. or whatever like that day. I think it's actually brought up like a really good avenue to like just be able to stream in your natural state.
Oh my gosh, yes. Going back to the pajamas.
Yes, exactly. I want to be able to stream in my pajamas.
Yes.
Is what I'm saying. Without anybody questioning me.
Well, it's funny you should say that. Before I went full VTubing avenue, I did a series of streams in November called Nod Off November, where I'd been wearing makeup consistently on stream and I didn't wear makeup at work. Right? Like, this is the difference, at least in the emotional ways VTubing slash face cam streams can get you. Because I always feel exhausted after face cam streams. But with Not Off November, I spent an entire month just forcing myself into my pajamas with no makeup.
Well, honestly, that's a good idea.
And it was really good and it was really healthy. And then toward the end, I got a comment on my forehead about it being a place someone could land a plane on.
Rude.
Right? Now, no, I had taught children for like years at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So I am used to that comment coming from a child being like, man, sensei, did you eat too much pizza?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, yes.
Yes.
Because I am allowed to eat. Do you get hungry? Yeah. Do you want to eat pizza? Yeah.
Yep.
Shrug. Look at the child. The child. Yeah, that's legit. Mm-hmm. No, your existence is now fair since you have reasoned it correctly. But after it, I joked along with it. And then I was like, so why did you feel like doing that?
Yeah.
To the person in the chat. And they were like, oh, because it was. I'm like, but why was that your first comment? Do you walk up to people and normally do that?
Yeah.
Then later on, they blocked me.
They blocked you? I mean, they didn't have an answer.
And apparently people are scared to answer those sort of things. But yeah, that was honestly the defining moment that I was like, yeah, no, I'm a VTube for a bit.
Mm-hmm. No, I get it. Like I said, like my friends know that I cosplay in real life. So when they heard I was streaming for the first time, a lot of them assumed I would be doing it with webcam or in cosplay.
The fools.
And I was just like, oh, you think I'm gonna dress up every day? You know how long it takes to get into cosplay?
Yeah.
Doing all the outfit, the wig, the makeup, removing everything, removing all the makeup, the entire shebang. If you you're doing something fancier, like it can take like an hour. And like,
Oh God, yes.
I cannot imagine, because like, I would not be able to stream the way I do right now, because the way I stream, I probably have a lot less set of time than most people do, because I tend to stream pretty much straight after I finish work. I wake up in the morning, I have a full-time job, but I work from home. So I can just wake up in the morning, pop open the work laptop, start working, and then like around six, I finish, I close the laptop and I start stream. Like there's like a 5 minutes gap between the two of them.
Remember to eat though, or do you eat during work?
I do usually eat during work, like make sure I like do my dinner a little bit like leading up before the end of it, or I have like a big lunch.
Okay.
Rarely I'll forget and I'll eat after stream, because like it will still be fine, because I usually end stream around nine, so it's not extremely late yet.
Right.
But if I had to like start doing cosplay makeup, like that my stream would be delayed by an hour. I would not be able to start stream straight out of work.
I can see that. Yep. I definitely feel like VTubing, at least as a medium of expression, you can do a lot of stuff with this. And there's so much community content. There's always going to be toxic stuff in any community. I put my foot down here before anybody goes, man, but the VTube community is really toxic and blah, 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 blah. I'm like, people are toxic, honey. Not the community. Yeah. People are toxic.
I think like any community that reaches a certain size is going to have drama. That's just the inevitable law of fandom creation.
It's like a classroom. How many people had drama in the classroom?
Yeah.
Let's say out of 30 people, three people had it. That's 10%. And when you increase that size of a community of any kind, right? That is going to increase the number of that 10%, right?
The sampling size, people are like, oh, but you know, there was like less drama like 10 years ago. It's like 10 years ago, nobody was VTubing. Like,
yeah. There wasn't even live streams, right? Or was that a thing?
No, there were live streams, but they were definitely not like on a VTubing level yet. Like live streaming was also just harder 10 years ago. Yeah, the 10% from 10 years ago, like maybe there was 100 people and now there's like a million. Like the 10%, you know, it's, you know, even 10% of a million is like, I don't know, 100,000? It's a lot of people.
It's got lots of zeros. That's, let's just say that.
Yeah, there's plenty of zeros. So, you know.
The only math I know is GMing.
Exactly. I can count to 20.
I can count to 20 in three languages. That's it.
Oh. Wait, what's the third one? I assume English, Japanese?
Indonesian.
Ooh.
I will not demonstrate because
that's fine.
I'm going to embarrass myself pronunciation-wise, despite being half Indonesian.
That's okay.
So, do you have any people that you're really inspired by in the VTubing community?
I do, though I'm going to sound a little cheesy, and it's mostly my friends.
Oh my God, that's so sweet, but no, continue.
It's a lot of the friends I've made in the VTubing community. I still sometimes feel like I'm new to it, even though I've been doing it for a year. But a lot of people I know have been doing it for longer, and they're extremely inspiring to me. The way they do their streams, the way they handle their community, the kind of events and fun things they think of. They're all so creative and so cool. I love them all a lot. Yes. Shout out a couple of my friends.
Yes, please.
One of the first people I met in the VTubing community is an artist named Piffle. She draws emotes and she does like art streams, and she is so creative. She has like really fun streams and such a sweetheart to talk to, and like she inspired me a lot.
Nice.
Especially in the early days, like start streaming more often. Some other friends of mine is Echo. She's like a gummy worm alien.
Oh yes, I've seen Echo stream.
Yes. She does like a lot of horror games, and she has like this really chaotic fun energy that like is always
sounds familiar,
really fun to watch. And like she inspires me a lot the way she does the community. She has like really fun redeems that are like, she has like stickers, and like she has redeem that like allows you to send like a fake text message that pops up on the screen, and it's always really
that's really cool. I really love the interaction element.
To do one more shout out of people I admire, like another friend of mine, Haubernacht, he does like a lot of hand streams, even though he's a VTuber, like he never shows his face, but like he does like painting a lot of like models for Warcraft and stuff, which I think is like really cool because like it's something you don't see every day, and because he has his hands on stream, he can like funny little redeems sometimes that you wouldn't be able to do without like that kind of interactivity. And it's kind of inspired me to like want to do like a handcam stream as well. Like
handcam streams are fun,
even if it's just like drawing or building or something. Like I love the creativity you've got in the YouTuber atmosphere.
I have a redeem that's called T20.
Ooh.
So someone rolls a 20 and that's the minute break that I get. And I sit down with a cup of tea with everyone.
Oh, that's so cute.
So it's like, hey guys, we're going to have T20. So the person who does it, please roll me a T20 in chat. And it is the most expensive redeem because it just straight up stops the stream.
Yeah.
Yeah. We just chat and we just chill. And it's honestly really lovely, but it's like a thing. Like, people will go get tea before we get T20 so we can all spend time having tea together, which is honestly really sweet and was a bigger nightmare when I was using Vroid avatars because I had to have two webcams going at once.
But
I'm back to PNG tubing at the moment, or in my case, I suppose GIF, GIF, whatever the hell you want to call it, live your best life. There are better things in the world to complain about. It's GIF tubing anyway.
But GIF tubing. You're correct, you're correct. You're saying it right.
With the GIF tuber avatar, I can just talk and it's doing like the while I can have the camera and I don't have to. Another thing that I think I've benefited from VTubing-wise is not needing to buy a million lights.
That's it. Like, my light is actually really bad. My setup, if I want to start using the webcam, because, like, my light is only directly overhead. So, like, as you can imagine, like, that's probably the worst kind of lighting you can have.
Makes you look so ominous.
That's really weird shadows. Yeah. So I'd have to get a whole, I don't know, reflector and, like, different light screens or whatever to, like, actually set up. Something good for a webcam, or like find a different place to sit, I guess.
So my setup faces the window because I like looking outside when I work. It makes me feel not like I'm trapped within the depths of a void and stuck inside all day because your girl needs sunlight. Like, the sunflower thing is not actually a joke. If I do not get a certain degree of, I was going to say vitamin D, but that's a euphemism. If I do not get a certain degree of sunlight a day, I start to get jittery and go a little insane.
Understandable.
Which is to the detriment of my moon child partner. Because I am a child of the day, and they are a child of the night and the pitch black void.
I mean, it's a good thing you're not a werewolf then.
It's very convenient, but honestly, though, I do not sleep on full moon nights. It's too bright.
It was funny. Like, people didn't believe me, but I actually have, like, one of those sleep tracker things that, like, tracks the quality of your sleep. And at some point, I could actually see, like, specifically on full moons, I was sleeping worse.
Right. I wonder if it's because of the UV reflective light of the moon, though, right? Like, because if the moon is reflecting a lot more UV, maybe that's what wakes me up.
Yeah.
Like, your body's like, oh, it is the nighttime, but it is also the day.
I mean, I'm a fairly light sleeper to begin with, so I'm guessing, like, just that little bit of extra light, like, shimmering into the atmosphere might just be, you know, hitting me just wrong.
Maybe, like, it's the tides of our blood. Maybe we're 80% water, right?
Yeah.
Do people have tides?
I mean, that's a very good question. And I'm going to say, with no scientific backing whatsoever, yes.
So being a sea bunny, you would know this better than anyone because you don't even need to worry about the bones.
Exactly. I have, like, extra blood. There's no bones taking up space. Just a little bag of blood.
Which is one of the many benefits of having no bone.
Exactly. Please convert to my no bonism.
Okay, not to drag this through the gutter, but my brain just straight up went, no bonus.
No bonus.
I'm just picturing you with, like, a little picket fence sign going, do not bone.
Don't.
No bones.
Scarlett, don't worry. You don't need bones for a bonus.
I know. That's the best part. All right. The following questions were submitted to our Twitter and Discord. Make sure to follow at MakersLore for news, future guest announcements, or to get your questions featured on our next Campfire Q&A. Are you ready?
Oh, let's go.
Question one comes from Super Tiger Fox at Super Tiger Fox. What is the hardest part about character building that you love to do despite its difficulty?
Oh, that's a good question. I will scooch it over a little bit from the VTubing because, like I said, the VTubing, Jeruna is basically me. So, like, building her as a character has never been hard because I, like, what I don't know, I make up on the fly, essentially.
Right.
But when it comes to character building, I have DM'd my fair share of games. And honestly, it's always the stuff that you don't think about. Like, you can have, like, this whole thing planned out, like a backstory and a motivation, and your players will come up with, like, the one question you had never thought of before.
So what do they want to drink?
Yeah, exactly. They will look at you expectantly, like, well, I have to make this up right now. And sometimes I can manage and sometimes I can't. Out of the things I can prepare for, honestly, the hardest part, names. Names are really hard for me. I'm bad at them. I still, to this day, use like the wonderful random name generators that kind people on the internet have compiled over the decades.
Glory to all name generators. For they have saved many a writer, a VTuber, a everything, comic artist. Especially a GM. Hot damn.
Honestly, when I'm DMing, like one of the things I have open, like just behind the screen on the lowdown, is just like a random name generator with like preset 10 names just in case I need like an NPC on the fly. Because if I didn't do that, like half my NPCs would just be named like Bob or Steve, like I'd be.
So if I haven't prepared a name list or gotten, so Xanathar's Guide to Everything, I think it's the one, has like 7 pages or 10 pages worth of names.
Oh, really?
I had a DM who said, who needs that? And I looked at them and I'm like, me, it's me. I need that.
Please.
Because it's also organized by region. So it's like vaguely Asia style names, vaguely like elf name. That sort of thing.
I have respect for people who can like think of names with like a lot of like nice symbolism and like cool meaning to it. It's a skill I don't have. I will reiterate that like I picked Jeruna as a name because it's just a Latin name for sea bunny. And about like, I'd say like once every 3 or 4 months, somebody has this realization and I get a DM saying like, hold on a second. I just Googled sea bunny and the Wikipedia page says Jeruna Pava. Is this why you picked your name? And I have to be like, yes. Yes, this is the call out. You've caught me. Caught me in the trap.
So I'm going to give you a quick lowdown that not even the players knew at the time. I never named the baby Quaddle in the Kingdom of the Crystal Quaddle one-shot that I did for the College of Inspiration until the moment, because I named its parents. I wasn't smart enough to give it a name. And then I'm like, nope, this thing has future sight. And they're like, what should we call you? It's like, And then I was looking at things and I'm like, I looked at the time and it was like 8:50 and I'm like, ephemera. Or something like that.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I was looking at the clock on my thing and there was an 8 in there and that's why it was called ephemera.
Oh my God.
And ephemera vaguely sounded like ephemeral, which worked. Mm-hmm. So it sounded like it was on purpose. But nah, man, I was looking at a number 8 when it came up with that name.
I mean, I will also admit, like, this is just, like, a neat little trick for DMs who speak a language that most of your table doesn't speak. I sometimes just use words in Dutch, and nobody has caught me yet.
I understand. That was, I did a whole bunch of lore in Indonesian. The only problem is some Indonesian creatures and myths and gods are used in, honestly, a lot of Japanese, like, bosses.
Oh, really?
Like Garuda.
Oh, yeah.
In Final Fantasy.
Garuda is a popular one.
It's just Garuda's an Indonesian god.
Oh, I did not realize. Man, Garuda is, like, in every single RPG ever.
Yeah, right? And I was like, hang on. When I first interacted with an RPG, I'm like, hang on. Garuda's like Hold a god. Is this cool?
Yeah.
Are we good with this?
I mean, I had this experience when I was playing through The Witcher 3 because like some of them are just like, they use Dutch words.
Oh my
but
God,
they pronounce
really?
Them badly, but like they're written the same way. Oh. And I had like a bit of whiplash where I was like, hold on a second. Hold on. Like I'm trying to remember if like, which one was it? Like one of those low level like vampires monsters, and I think they just like used the Dutch word for like a bloodsucker or a leech or whatever, and like something like, because I heard it in dialogue a few times before I saw it written, I was like, that's a weird way to say, oh wait a second. did he just use just like the Dutch word for like bloodsucker? Hello.
Suspicious. I wonder if this means something.
Yeah, it is. It's literally bloedzuiger, which is literally just bloodsucker in Dutch.
How do they pronounce it?
I forgot. It's been a while since I played this game. And I remember talking to a friend about it. And they were like, yeah, Bloedzuiger. It sounds so cool. It's like a cool name. I was like,
no. No. Oh, man.
They mispronounce all the Dutch in that game, by the way. There's a couple of like characters who have Dutch names as well. But like, I have very little expectations of like Dutch content in media. That's... Like, I'm just happy it's there.
Honestly, yes, same. Context. I don't actually know how to speak a lot of Indonesian. Because my father said, English is really difficult, learn that. Because he is a second language speaker. So he didn't teach me the Indonesian at the time when if I was taught the Indonesian, I would have been great at it. I learned the swears.
The most important part.
I also got told I know how to say the word sit down, and I've got taught a lot of the words for food. And there have been times when I've just made up a language on the fly, vaguely out of Indonesian and Japanese, because I code mix all the time. Especially after living there for so long, I definitely use the reactionary words in Japanese a lot. And I use them at the table as well. So when I was living in Japan, one of my favorite things was that my players and I basically almost had a bilingual way of using D&D. Like, I was always addressed as DM Summer, firstly.
Oh, that's so cute. I actually love incorporating like bilingualism into a table or a setting. It's obviously very hard to do because you don't want to leave out anybody in the group, and you kind of need everybody to be on like a similar level. But I've had this experience in Japan as well, because I'd be playing with other people who lived in Japan and worked in Japan and had like a decent grasp of Japanese, and we actually made like elfish Japanese.
Nice.
So like we could have the different characters speaking at like different levels of elfish, and it was kind of cool.
That's great. So I know Phoenix treats Draconic as Japanese.
Oh, cool.
And there have been times when something's happened in Draconic and he will just say something.
That's so cool. Like, I actually love this concept so much. Mm-hmm. Back before I moved in Japan, in the Netherlands, I did like LARP a few times.
Nice.
As a whole, like Europe is like a little bit more multilingual. Like most people will speak two or three languages. So it's like a lot more possible.
Yeah.
And because like LARPers, like especially in Europe where it's easy to travel, you know, you can cross the borders quite easily. It's usually not that far away. People will come from different countries to play in different areas. So like the LARP I was part of for a while, like because it was in the Netherlands, common was still Dutch.
Right.
But English functioned as Elvish.
Nice.
And Orcish was like German. And like they like kind of had like different languages assigned to like different like, you know, actual languages in real life. And this actually made for some like really cool concepts because I had a friend of mine who was like an international student in the Netherlands. And she didn't speak Dutch very well, just like a little bit. But she spoke English fluently. So her character and my character like worked out our backstories where she was like an elven noble. Who was like on a diplomatic mission. Well, I was like a half elf.
And you were the translator?
And like it was like a lot of chaos and like a lot of fun, like in character moments. It was so much fun.
Yes. My experience with LARP is quite minimal, but my boyfriend plays LARP, and one of my best friends is like the head of his war band because it's Swordcraft where we are, which isn't the same sort of LARP, I think, as it might be in Europe. So Swordcraft is based off the Warhammer fantasy.
Oh, I see.
My boyfriend and one of my best friends do it quite regularly, and their entire war band is like vaguely a lot of Asian-inspired countries. So that's how they've explained it in their armor. And the joke for my NPC character was like she was a kitsune that was picked up.
Aww.
Mainly because I wanted to be an Ara Ara fox lady, and I kicked butt. So I started a rumor in town that there was a shapeshifter among the people, and we had witch hunters around, and like they were after things like changelings and elves and whatever.
Oh my god.
And so there was a lot of tension, like it's grimdark, so it's going to be just tense in general. But by the end of the whole thing, I'd started a rumor that there was a shapeshifter among the people. My character was Momiji, aka the autumn leaf, and I had like an autumn leaf in my hair. Because you know how kitsune have the leaf on their head?
Yes!
But darling, I don't know what you think. It's right here. This is the little leaf on my head.
Aww.
And she was that kind of character. And she would be like, my goodness, have you heard the latest rumor? And I would just be spilling out bull the entire time.
I love it! Oh my god, I love it.
So I planted several seeds of absolute chaos. By the end of it, people thought that the head of the Witch Hunters Guild was a shapeshifter.
Oh my god.
They thought there was like six or seven shapeshifters among the people. It was me. I was the shapeshifter, right, the entire time.
I love that. That's amazing.
I really loved that experience. So the reason I got onto this topic and to begin with is because I was from a different land, I got to use Japanese in character.
Nice.
Right? So I was using it throughout the thing, and everyone was like, are you actually speaking Japanese? I'm like, hai, nihongo wo shabetteru, kind of thing.
Cool.
There are war bands in Australia, at least from what I've heard, that do straight up have full conversations in Japanese if they are vaguely Japanese-inspired war bands. Like, it's really cool. I love that as a like, LARP concept.
Just, like, being able to incorporate, like, multiple languages. It's, like, it's difficult because you need to obviously have, like, multiple people to be able to, like, get in on it. But it's so cool when you can manage to pull it off.
I And it makes the place feel real as well. Like, it adds another layer to it.
Mm, exactly.
Are you ready for your next question?
Yes, I am.
Out of all the animal themes you could have used, what inspired you to use something as unique and random as Daruna Pava from Evil Sandwich at Evil Sandwich 83?
Okay, so this kind of comes back to where I mentioned it kind of came to me in a dream.
Dream and fever state.
Yeah. So, like, I don't think it was specifically, like, I knew what animal I wanted yet, but I, like I said, I knew I had, like, a monochrome design with yellow in mind. I had, like, a fake memory, like, of the kind of hair and horns I was going for, and I just think sea bunnies are really cute.
I mean, yes.
So that was, like, the character I immediately gravitated towards, where I was like, it's actually kind of perfect, because, like, they are, of course, like, you know, black and white in real life, but they can be a little yellow, depending on, like, where you find them. It's probably something to do with, like, the amount of, like, dirt in the water, I don't know, but they are, like, on a spectrum from, like, completely white to, like, very yellowish. But I'm afraid that, like, beyond me saying that, like, I just think they're cute and it came to me in a dream, I don't have a much better answer to it.
I think that's legit. That works. That's fine. Love it. Are you ready for the next one?
Yes.
The next question is from Libby at Libby the Cat. How can bees fly with such tiny wings? And how can we harness this power for world domination?
Okay, now this might sound a little scientific, but according to all known laws of aviation, there is no way a bee should be able to fly. Yep. Its wings are too small to get its fat little body out. Okay, you see where I'm going with this.
Sorry?
I was about to read out the bee movie script copy-paste. The bee, of course, flies anyway, because bees don't care what humans think is impossible.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think what we should do to harness this power for world domination is just get a lot of bees, just a lot of them. And we can, like, basically lift things at infinitum. Like, I'm pretty sure that's how physics work. Like, if we just, like, stack enough bees underneath it, we have infinite power.
We'll glitch out. So what we do is we activate the bee glitch. And by activating the bee glitch, we will be able to shift.
Yes.
We'll be able to shift the...
By bee glitch.
It's into universe B. Or by moving the planet by exactly 1 centimeter a year via this glitch, because it goes pixel by pixel.
Yes. And then with, like, a half press of the A button, we can...
Oh, yes, we need to remember to phase through. We got to phase through slowly. Mars to be able to make this work. Or else, like, if you don't use the Mars hack, like, who even are you?
That's why you need to, like, at least touch base with Mars first, because, like, otherwise you don't know for sure. So, like, this is still in the future. We need to touch base with Mars first, and then we'll eventually get to Universe B.
It's totally how it works.
Yep.
Lore makers, where lore happens.
That's the way it's intended. Exactly. All right. Put it in your next campaign.
Yeah.
Trust me.
Well, I mean, I'm running Astral Sea, so there are going to be some things. I have gotten many an interesting backstory from everyone at the table. Oh boy.
Ooh.
They do not realize the sheer amount of memes they have already made me instigate without even trying.
Excellent.
The best part is, because they will be rephrased with different phrasing, they will not understand the memes until it is too late.
Until it's far too late.
The final question for today is from Scarlet Piano Wires at SP Wires. Do you have any other hobbies besides games and art?
Why, yes, I do. I guess I touched on it a little bit earlier. I do cosplay, or at least I used to a lot before the plague happened, and I kind of stopped going to events. But because of that, I actually quite like sewing as well. I haven't done it recently because for a good while, my sewing corner was a mess. A big, big mess. And I did not have easy access to my sewing machine. But I actually quite enjoy both sewing plushies, small little things, as well as making embroidered patches and stuff.
Nice.
And I want to get back into doing that because I think it's actually quite fun and it's relaxing in a different way, because it's like one of those things you can do very well passively while, like, enjoying, like, a podcast or something else, and, like, just turning off your mind, putting it on zero, and just, like, make sewing machine go bruh, you know?
I definitely understand that.
Yes. So that's, like, another hobby I'm really into, though. Like, beyond that, I guess I mostly do just games and art. I like to, like, just go out sometimes, enjoy, like, museums and such. like, you know, like attractions and museums or like interesting exhibitions. But that's again, like one of those pre-plague things that I don't do that much anymore.
So for you, what would be your perfect day out?
My perfect day out? That's a good question.
Oh, thank you.
I think it really depends on like my energy levels of the day, because sometimes the perfect day out is the perfect day in.
Right.
Where I just like sit at home and like just vibe, like watch YouTube, play some
games. Have no bones.
I have no bones. Then on the days when I do have like a bit of bones, I guess my perfect day out is just like meeting up with a friend and just like in a kind of casual way, you know, like having lunch first, like chatting a bit and like maybe be like arranged to go to a movie or like, you know, just like vibe in the game center or like go to karaoke afterwards.
Yep, sorry.
Like, just have like a good time together.
I'm not going to lie. The whole time you were explaining your thing, I couldn't unsee like a tiny little sea slug using essentially like a tank set of wheels made out of bones and ribbon, just being like, so when I have bones, and I just pictured a slug on a tank.
That's me. That's when I have bones and I go out to the karaoke bar.
And like a little fish my tank bowl. Bones. You have like a mech.
Yeah. My little fish mech.
So good. And on that note,
it's very important. Like getting them out.
I know one of the hobbies that you have and one of the things you enjoy is D&D. Do you have a D20 for me to do some D20 questions?
I do. In fact, I can rattle my back a bit. Ooh. Oh, wait. There you go.
Ooh. We are about to do the D20 questions. D20 questions. I have a set, well, multiple actually, sets of 20 questions, and our interviewee will roll upon these tables with a 20-sided die. So, Diruna.
Yes.
Roll it.
Okay. I was picking my die. Like, what do you feel in the mood for? Would you like my, like, kind of tasty, like, Miku colored dye? It's like a very gummy looking green. Or would you like my color changing rainbow dye?
Color changing rainbow, always.
Okay, let's go. I've got a 13.
A 13, okay. All right. Conveniently, this is a question I actually asked you on Twitter that I was like, oh, I'll just skip that one, but I guess it's here. Mm-hmm. If you got thrown into an isekai of your choice, where would you get thrown into?
Okay, does it have to be like an isekai as well? Or can it be like any world to get isekai'd into?
So I would say any world you can be isekai'd into is fine.
Okay, Pokemon, easy. Absolutely, Pokemon.
Yes, actually, that is the best answer.
It's a perfect world to get isekai'd into because it's fun. You have basically no responsibilities. Everybody's just having a good time. Pokemon are cool. You can befriend them and like, of course, there's, like, terrifying things in the Pokédex, but, like, we've all watched the anime. We all know, like, you know, Ash gets electrocuted a million times. He's fine.
That's true.
Like, it all works out. Like, even though there's, like, weird and threatening things in the Pokémon world, you're going to be able to vibe.
Yeah.
Like, all the scary things you read online, that's not going to happen. I'm just going to be there, get some Pokémon, get a Mareep, and that Mareep is going to charge my electronics on the way around.
Johto. So Mareep would be your... So Johto specifically, slash, would that Mareep be your starter slash your partner Pokemon?
Mareep would be like up there as like my partner Pokemon. Mm-hmm. Like I have a bit of a Ditto obsession. So like Ditto would have to come with me too. No bones. And when I say Ditto obsession, I look over at like the corner of my room that is dedicated to just like an entire tower of Ditto merchandise.
That's dangerous in Japan. There's been so much Ditto merch recently.
Yes. I mean, actually, the funny thing is, when I first moved to Japan, which was like around 2015, Ditto merchandise did not exist.
Yeah, no.
Literally.
Yeah.
Like, there was one piece of Ditto merchandise, and it was like a random Comic Con exclusive of a Ditto transformed into a Pikachu, and it cost like $300 on eBay.
Damn.
That was the only official Ditto merchandise in existence. And then like literally end of like 2015, 2016,
it just exploded.
They released like Ditto plushies.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, I'm gonna buy these because it's the only Ditto merch they've ever made. I'm excited. Before this, I had to buy stuff off Etsy. So I, you know, I buy two of each. I'm like, cool. And then like, you know, they release more. And I'm like, well, I'll just keep buying it because I can say I own every piece of Ditto merch in existence.
Oh, no.
And this is a slippery slope, Scarlett.
This is a slippery slope. I have seen many people go down these paths. Trust me, I'm one of them.
So I started like thinking like, well, I just started out, you know, getting all the Ditto merch because there was none before.
Yeah.
And then they just keep releasing it. And now we are here 7 years later.
Yep.
And I don't even know how many hundreds of pieces of Ditto merch is in this corner of my room.
I understand this completely because that was me with Okami. I have managed to calm down significantly after my friend got me like a $400, $500 fig.
Oh my God.
From First for Figures of like an Ami statue that is absolutely gorgeous. It is the crowning piece of my collection. And she did it for my birthday.
Aww.
And the reason it's like it hits always so hard is that she comes in with this box and then she whips out her phone. And no one whips out a phone to record someone's reaction unless it's a very expensive or something they know they're gonna fucking love.
Yes.
And I was like, why are you filming me? What did you do?
What did you do?
And she goes, just open it. And I'm like, oh my God. And then I peeled it back and I'm like, this is a First Figures statue.
Oh.
What? Because I had wanted a First Figures statue for ages and ages, because they do really beautiful Okami ones. And she got me, like, the one that I'd been eyeing for years.
Aww.
Like, literal years. She'd managed to find it, like, in perfect condition, secondhand on Mercari.
That's so sweet.
And I can't believe she did that. It's like, she's also the same person who was like, I got you a dice tray. That dice tray has since died because of moving. But got you me a dice tray that was like one of those big mega ones, mm-hmm. because she knew that I had like 18 sets, now 19 sets of dice, because I had a collection.
Dice bag that's barely complete.
Right.
This part.
It's just, you need it for something. Like my partner goes, you don't need it. And I'm like, no, you do. When you are playing multiple NPCs, it's color coding for the fight.
Also, I think as DM, you have an excuse to have multiple dice sets because I'm not sure how it is with your players, but like I'm lending dice to at least one person every session, like whoever forgot their dice that night. So
most of the time my players are okay. I haven't run in person for a while, but a lot of my friends are also DMs and they are also dice weapons. So usually I buy a new set of dice for the new character I'm playing because I like to embody a character's entire existence into their set of dice. So this was hard when I was a rogue because like this happened, I needed more d6s than my set provided, so I just kept stealing it, and I was just like, this is character growth. We're just going to say this is character. This is like all of the NPCs she's interacted with adding into this sneak attack damage. But the worst part is when you spy dice with the plan to play a character that you never do.
I feel that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I at least always like buy dice that just like activate like the dragon part of my brain. Where I'm shiny
horrible.
I've ended up with like a couple of like metal dice, and, like, color changing dice, and I'm just like, they feel good to touch.
Nice. I won 2 giveaways from Phoenix Dice.
Nice.
I won one set where it was 2 dice, and then there was one set where it was 3 sets of dice. So it was 2 sets of dice and then 3 sets. So all of a sudden I had 5 more sets. Now, I gave some away to my players because I was like, but who wants dice? Because I'm like looking at my dice bag, knowing my partner will be vaguely angry at me if I like bring more dice into my life. Because he's like, affirm, I have a set of dice. And I'm like, but what if you had more?
What if more dice?
Yeah, what if more dice? And like I have, what is it? I do have like quite a few. I had more, but then I gave some away to players when I left the country. So I gave a set to each of my players of like their favorite characters die out of my thing that especially the people who always borrowed that set.
Yeah.
Because I had players who always borrowed those sets.
Mm.
My God. Love them. Love them so much. Are you ready for your next question?
I am.
Roll it.
Let's go. I got a 17.
That was a very satisfying roll, by the way. I heard that. That was
one of my metal dice. I switched it up.
That was a nice clang. 17. Okay.
Yes.
You have to get to the top of a mountain as your character.
Okay.
So in my head, I think I meant this for like vaguely any character if somebody had a storyline. But in this case, it's your VTuber avatar.
Yes.
How do you get to the top of this mountain?
I walk up. A more serious answer is, like, I think Jeruna as a character, she's very agile, she's very quick. She might not be as good on land as she is under the ocean, but mm-hmm. she is also boneless and bouncy, and she does not tire out due to the lack of bones, because that's where the fatigue is stored. That's the scientific explanation for fatigue. So without the bones, you cannot tire her out. She will go straight to the top of this mountain. She'll just keep walking.
Okay, I picture, like, the bunny aspect kicking in more. Like, you'd, like, mm-hmm. push yourself down, and because of the sudden extra weight of, like, gravity yes. from not being underwater, right? The sudden extra weight of gravity pushes down, and when you eventually, like, raise yourself up, it's so much pressure against it that you just go pyong.
Exactly. Very bouncy.
Very just bouncy.
Shooting across the map. Like, I imagine that, like, if this was a game, and, you know, Jeruna was, like, a character and, like, a kind of, like, build or, like, class she had to pick, she's definitely, like, a DPS glass cannon. Goes very fast.
I like
looms
that.
Across the map.
I like that.
Like, the legs are long mm-hmm. for good jumping.
Nice. I'm definitely, I would classify myself as more melee brawler or mm-hmm. paladin tank. I'm either the healer.
Oh.
I have a mug that literally mm-hmm. says team healer, and then on the back of it says again, because I'm almost always the healer. But I would also wouldn't mind being the tank healer, who is also, like, just punching the crap out of the person attacking.
I love that.
I mean, like, as far as Scarlett, the VTuber avatar goes, with the lycanthropy and, like, the bardness, I'm just generally a barbarian by, like, mm-hmm. core mechanic.
Yeah. You said yeah. Deep in the soul, it's the barbarian.
It's the barbarian. Sometimes a girl got a rage against the machine.
Yes.
Question mark?
Yes. Yes, exactly.
All right. Last question. Are you ready?
Okay, let's go. That's a 20.
So I've
got ourselves a 20.
Okay, I'm not you changing. I'm changing to my other table because Magic Fire had to do this one. And
oh my.
You are going to have to do the same. So I'm going to roll a d4 on my end.
Okay.
And that is the number of minutes you have to tell me a story. You have to make up a story on the spot.
Okay. Okay, okay.
You have 4 minutes, which is way more than Magic got.
Okay, so...
1 second.
Once upon a time...
let me start the timer. Eager Beaver, right out the gate. You can tell you're a GM, my God. Ready? 3, 2, 1, go!
Okay, so once upon a time, there was a little human girl called Scarlett. She was definitely not a wolf, and she went on a grand adventure because, you know, that day she had run out of tea
mm-hmm.
and they weren't selling any tea in the store. Mm-hmm. So, you know, she had to go find tea somewhere mm-hmm. else because somebody redeemed it on her stream, and, like, you can't just, like, let them down. So she did go BRB from Twitch for a while, but they were understanding about it. Like, I don't know, maybe she brought her phone with her and she's just, like, live streaming a journey as she, like, is walking around town, but... Either way, nobody's selling tea. It's crazy. Like, somebody, like, some tea goblin has bought up every single bit of tea in, like, all of Australia.
The scoundrels.
So where do you go when there's no tea on land? You do the next logical thing. You dive into the ocean. Because that's where the tea leaves are hiding when you cannot find it. Either way, she dives. She goes swimming. She bought some, like, you know, like, some simple, like, seaweed, some underwater poison. Like, don't worry about the breeding. She has got this figured out. She knows how to do this. So as she is diving, she's looking around. She's looking for the tea. She mostly finds a lot of seaweed. And she's kind of wondering, can you make seaweed tea? Would this be good? Would it be a soup? Because mm-hmm. seaweed soup is a thing. So is seaweed tea just called seaweed soup? There's a lot of questions going through her mind right now. But it's not helping her with the tea. So she keeps on searching. And off in the distance... She sees a palace. It's, like, so big. It's a grand palace. And, like, there's, like, this cobblestone road mm-hmm. leading up to it. And there's, like, all these tiny little sea creatures that are just, like, kind of bouncing and hobbling around, like, going into there. They're, like, drawing little carts. And, like, some of them are bigger. So, like, instead of horses, it's just, like, a bigger fluffy sea creature
that's
drawing the cart forward. And then, like, in the cart... That's just, like, more of the sea bunnies. Like, there's just a lot
of sea bunnies.
And she's like, clearly this is a place with a thriving commercial district, so I should go check it out.
You ran a tight ship.
So, you know, exactly. So, you know, she goes in there, she goes to the marketplace, and there's, mm-hmm. like, all the bunnies. There's, like, I would say a lot of smells in the air, but because he's under the ocean, it mostly smells like salt. That's the primary smell that she's like noticing. But that's okay, because it means that like her nose can be sharp for anything that isn't salty. And she is on the case, because like off in the distance, she like got that like just the faintest whiff of like chamomile. And like she's like, somebody here has tea. Somebody here, I got this. So she is going down, and like she goes more and more into the castle. And like the thing is, there's guards, but they don't really care. they're not really stopping her. They're kind of like looking at her. And they're just like kind of like bouncing up and down. They're kind of vibing.
She waves.
The guards wave back. And you know, they kind of just let her in. They're cool with it. So you know, she is following her nose, which is definitely not extra sharp because she's a werewolf or anything. It's just like a regularly normal sharp sense of smell.
It's a regular human nose. She's not a sea shark. Nope.
Exactly. So you know, she's in the castle, and like she comes up on like this big circular stairway that goes up, and like at the end, as she like winds up the stairs, she sees this big hall and like just a tiny table at the end of it, and like the tea set is ready. It's there, and it's not just one cup, it's two cups.
Nande.
And like at the table there's a lady, and like she's dressed in like white, and like she has white hair and like some like little silvery and golden accents and stuff, and it's like all very fancy. And she's like, I've been expecting you, Scarlet.
Scarlet blubbles back.
And is that the timer?
That was the timer. That was brilliant.
Let's go.
I love it. It's cliffhanger and everything. Love it.
Cliffhanger.
Yes. That was so brilliantly done.
Cool story.
I fully understand your GMing style from that one section. My God. That sounds like the perfect measure of chaos. And like, are you prepared to die and have no bones by the end of this? And it's like... So I have this thing where I like to collect bones too, but it's not quite the same thing. Sometimes I just find them in holes at the back of the garden.
Yeah, you take the bones of the dead. I take the bones of the living. We're like two different ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, it's just like it's like hey, so are they still alive?
I mean, they are. They're living a better boneless existence.
I see. Do you want that?
Yeah.
Do you want one of these? But it's like Scarlet finds like a random, like a giant dinosaur bone. You want this?
Absolutely. I want to add it to my bone stack.
I'm just picturing, you know what I'm picturing? I'm picturing all of those images and gifs of like the dog and the dog, or like the any sort of like canine, like with their nose in the water, and the fish are going.
Yes.
And that's us. That's us.
That's us, basically. It's under the water, you know, like watching it.
It's just like, it's like chips. I'm like sending, it's like, you want some chips?
Want some chips?
Do you like a macaron?
Yes.
It's so good. It's so dumb.
Yeah. Well, either way, you are invited for tea.
Oh, I would love tea. It's such a shame that I didn't know you when I was living in Japan.
Right.
We would have been able to hang out and actually jam in person or in a park.
It's a shame. Like, I think you moved like only a few weeks after I like got to know you.
Yes, I think so.
We're, like,
I think that's exactly what happened.
In the middle of preparing for like your moving, subathon and everything.
Yeah. Yeah, so many things. Any hoozles. Thank you so much for joining the podcast today, hun. Is there anything you'd like to spruce or anything you'd like to say?
Oh, yes.
Where can we find you?
First of all, thank you so much for inviting me. This was a really good time.
Yay! It was chaos. I loved it.
Yes. I love a little bit of chaos in my life. You can find me basically everywhere under Joruna V. That is the letter V for VTuber. Joruna V. That goes for Twitter. That goes for Twitch. I'm on Ko-fi as well. Those are basically my main socials.
Go to the Ko-fi store.
Yes. I have like free VTuber assets if you want to download them from my Ko-fi store. I
donate anyway.
I will be making new ones in the future whenever I have some time. I usually make them for like specific games. So, you know, if your current ones include Kirby, Okami, Splatoon, and Klonoa. So those are some options, as well as a sea bunny happy meal, because my chat likes to joke about wanting to eat me even though I'm very poisonous.
That's a bad idea.
So I gave them a happy meal that includes no sea bunnies. It's just replica food.
Yes, no, the sesame bun that's like a pure white bun with the black sesame bits. I was like, that is brilliant. I love it.
Yes. And I think it's tiding them over, though. Not entirely. I keep telling them, you can't eat me, you'll die. You'll die. It's dangerous.
And like, Chat's like, oh, but like, we could still do it. And we're like, that's still a bad idea.
No, Chat is like, oh, it'll be worth it, though. It's like, no, you won't. You'll go to the hospital. It'll like, be very bad.
No medicine check or con save higher than a nat 20 is going to save your ass. Thanks for chatting around our campfire.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode of Lore Makers. Want to keep up with the podcast? Follow the Twitter at Makers Lore or join the Discord where you can find news, future guest announcements, and get your questions featured on our next session. If you enjoyed the show, consider rating and leaving a review on your preferred podcast platform. Or you can tweet us what bone you wouldn't want stolen, so I know who is listening. Want to make our campfire a little brighter? Consider joining the Ko-fi Campfire Club to have your name shouted out at the end of the podcast. Lots of love your way, my friends. See you around our campfire.
Bye-bye.